Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Ghost Hunter Next Door by Danielle Garrett, narrated by Amanda Ronconi. Introduction. The first rule of being a ghost whisperer? Don't tell anyone. Seriously, don't. Sure, it might sound harmless, a fun party trick even. I assure you, it's not. How do I know? Well, let's just say that I've had a lot of experience with this sort of thing, and 9 times out of 10, it turns into an all-consuming disaster. Being plagued by needy ghosts 24/7 is one thing. Being harassed by a horde of curious, or worse, grieving, flesh-and-blood people is an entirely different circus. I mean, really, who wants to hold an impromptu séance in the middle of the cereal aisle? Not me. And the manager of the grocery store probably isn't too crazy about the idea either. So, that's it. If you're a ghost whisperer, just keep your mouth shut and act normal. Ghosts? What ghosts? Now, if only I would start listening to my own advice. Chapter 1. There's nothing more obnoxious than having an easygoing Sunday morning ruined by a pair of warring ghosts. Unfortunately, that was my reality far more often than not.
You're blocking the screen, you talking feather duster.
Hayward Kensington III snapped at Flapjack, a gorgeous Himalayan cat who had once been my childhood pet.
Newsflash, stuffed shirt. I'm a ghost. You can see perfectly fine right through me.
Yeah, that's right. The cat talks. This is one of those things that sounds fun, but in reality turns out to be more of a pain in the rear than anything else. On the bright side, he doesn't require a litter box, and he doesn't meow when I use the can opener.
But it's distorted.
With an irritated growl, I stalked into the living room, coffee mug in hand. Do you two mind? I snapped, directing a frosty glare at my two constant, whether I wanted them to be or not. Dearly, not quite departed companions. Hayward bristled at my sharp tone and had the good sense, or manners, to look embarrassed. He wrung his gloved hands and bowed his head so that his face was mostly concealed by the silvery shadow of his top hat.
"Apologies, Lady Scarlet," he started, leaning into his Oxford accent. "I was simply trying to convey my displeasure to that beast."
Flapjack hissed in protest. His thick tail swished all the more, blurring the small TV screen entirely. And to think the day had started off so well. Still scowling, I skirted the back of the long couch and moved further into the living room, then set my mug on the coffee table, careful not to slosh any of the scalding liquid over the sides. I slammed my hands on my hips and planted my legs wide, glaring at the pair of them. "What is the one thing that I ask of you two?" Flapjack sat down and swirled his tail around his front paws. I swear he shrugged.
"I can't help it if he's so touchy about everything."
"Get down from there," I said, snapping my fingers and pointing at the floor. Flapjack's eyes narrowed, but he dropped off the edge of the entertainment center, landing soundlessly on his ghost paws. He flicked his fluffy tail up into the air, whipping the tip in feline irritation. He glared at me for a moment, then turned his displeasure back to Hayward as he stalked toward the couch. He leapt up and curled into a ball atop the pile of throw pillows gathered at one end of the couch. I chucked them all to one side during a frantic hunt for the remote control earlier that morning.
"Thank you, Lady Scarlet,"
Hayward said, with a self-satisfied grin. I rounded on him, and it slid from his face. "Drop the self-righteous routine, Hayward," I said. When he continued to hover, I took a deep breath, reaching for my last shred of patience. "What do you want?" Hayward was an old ghost, a once-upon-a-time English gentleman. He'd died in 1926 after suffering a heart attack during the encore of a premier musical performance at the Vienna Opera House, hence the perma coattails and top hat. I guess if you have to be a ghost, you may as well be a fashionable one. He took his hat from his head and passed it nervously between his hands.
"I was hoping you might invite Lady Gwen to dinner prior to tonight's meeting."
I sighed. "Hayward, why can't you invite her yourself?" Flapjack's head popped up, and in his best impersonation of Hayward's accent said,
"Oh, my stars. Lady Scarlet, can you imagine the horror, the impropriety? What would the peasants say?"
Hayward's silvery cheeks darkened, and he surged forward. I held up a hand. "Stop!" Flapjack cackled and made a face at the fuming ghost. I shot him a glare. "Knock it off, Flapjack, or I swear I'll banish you." His eyes narrowed, but he put his head back down on his paws. It was an empty threat. We both knew it, but it usually worked for at least a little while. Similar to a toddler's parents counting to three. Turning back to Hayward, I said, "I'll see if Gwen wants to come over before the meeting." His eyes brightened. "On one condition," I added, holding up one finger.
"Anything, Lady Scarlet."
With a victorious smile, I laid out my terms. "You let me watch TV in peace, with no running commentary, for the next 2 hours, before I have to go downstairs and work." Hayward popped his hat onto his head and nodded so vigorously it was a wonder it didn't fall back off.
"Of course. Not a word out of me, my lady."
"Yeah, we'll see." "That goes for you too, Flapjack," I said, settling into my favorite spot on the couch. The L-shaped sectional was a second-hand find, and from the feel of it, it was clear that whoever had owned it previously had rarely used any of the cushions except the one in the corner. It was a little saggy, but that was probably the reason I liked it so much. It was the couch equivalent of a perfectly worn pair of jeans. I reached for my coffee and remote control and smiled to myself as I nestled down into the cozy spot. With a few clicks, my favorite Sunday morning ritual officially began, emptying my DVR while sipping a steaming cup of coffee. In peace. After spending years abroad running from the literal ghosts of the past, I'd finally settled down in the charming town of Beechwood Harbor along Washington State's rustic coastline. Thanks to an inheritance from my grandmother, I'd opened a florist shop called Lily Pond Floral Design and was ready to begin a brand new chapter of my life. Ideally, a more normal chapter than the past few. It took over 6 months of hard work to get my shop open, during which I hadn't been the most social of residents. I'd barely explored my new hometown until after the shop's doors were open. At my grand opening, I'd found a curious community eager to pop in and learn all about their new neighbor, and occasionally buy a bouquet of flowers. I'd also quickly learned that while Beechwood Harbor was postcard perfect on the outside, it was teeming with paranormal activity and had more than a handful of supernatural residents thriving just underneath the surface. So far, I'd met a vampire, a telepath, and a pair of witches who all live at the Beechwood Manor, one of the town's historic homes that served as something of a supernatural halfway house. Knowing that vampires and witches shared your zip code would probably scare the bejeebies out of most people. I, however, was more or less used to it. Nothing about my life had been normal, so why should it start now? My first peek into the supernatural world took place on the eve of my 8th birthday. Once the festivities of my party dwindled to a pile of tattered wrapping paper, ribbons, and crumbs of leftover cake stuck to the ends of half-melted candles, my parents had tucked me into bed so that they could visit with my aunt and uncle in the living room. Restless, and more than a little sugar high, I'd sneaked out of my room and went down the hall to the playroom where all of my shiny new presents were waiting. As quietly as I could, I'd opened my dollhouse and introduced my old dollies to their new friends. As I'd played, the sugar rush wore off, and I'd lain down on the beanbag in the reading nook under the window and fallen asleep. When I opened my eyes, Flapjack was watching me from the doorway. The only wrinkle? He'd died 3 weeks prior to my birthday. For reasons still unknown, Flapjack had been given the chance to come back as a ghost and had returned to me that night. I'd raced downstairs to tell my parents, along with my aunt and uncle. They'd all smiled sadly at me, and my mother had taken me back to bed. She'd kissed my forehead and told me to give Flapjack a hug if I saw him again in my dreams. I tried to explain that it wasn't a dream and that he was actually watching us from the foot of the bed at that very moment. But she didn't believe me. They never did. After a few weeks of referring to him as my imaginary friend, they took me to see a counselor, who assured them it was a normal part of the grieving process. After all, Flapjack was my first brush with death, and at the age of 8, the whole concept was a little shaky. Shortly after that, Flapjack realized he could talk in his new form, and he advised me to stop talking about him to my parents. In hindsight, I suppose he was trying to avoid getting me dragged off to some asylum masquerading as a boarding school for troubled children. I'd heeded Flapjack's advice, and we still shared long conversations as he continued to follow me most everywhere I went, but I was careful not to talk to him if they were within earshot. The years went on, and more spirits crossed my path. Along the way, I'd been forced to come up with a myriad of different strategies to cope with my strange ability. At first, I tried ignoring the ghosts who reached out to me. That backfired when no less than 20 spirits accumulated in and around my childhood home, all of them refusing to budge until I listened to their problems. After that, I tried to help all of them, a plan that crashed and burned in spectacular fashion. As a high schooler, I had enough problems without adding the personal woes and perils of ghosts into the mix. Who could be expected to deal with breakouts and breakups, or agonize over prom dress selections with 10 ghosts chattering on about the terrible life choices their offspring were making on the other side of the state? After high school, I started traveling around and found that country hopping was an effective way to extricate myself from particularly sticky situations. Plus, it was one heck of a way to spend my 20s. By age 30, my resources had dried up, and I decided I was too old to keep letting my parents bail me out of trouble whenever my temporary jobs didn't quite cover my next plane ticket or hotel bill. I returned home to Arizona and found a job working in a local florist shop, and found what seemed like my true calling, creating beautiful botanical works of art. When my grandmother passed away, she left us some of money, and I decided to strike out on my own again. I may have been staying stateside, but my new business was an adventure, nonetheless. I was just getting started, but I had a good feeling about it. As long as I could keep all the ghosts in my life in check. Piece of cake, right? Per Hayward's request, I invited Gwen over for dinner prior to that evening's ghost support group meeting. After a few months in town, word had gotten around in the local specter circles that a ghost whisperer was in town. Out of necessity, I'd set aside Sunday evenings to hold a meeting. Then, and only then, ghosts can come to me with requests for assistance. Anything presented outside of those hours falls on deaf ears, no matter how persistent said ghosts are in their requests. Hayward and Flapjack are all that I can handle on a daily basis, and still they give my sanity a run for its money from time to time. In some ways, Gwen is another exception. She's the first ghost I met after arriving in Beechwood Harbor, and is the town maven, Queen Bee. She knows everything about everyone and was the one who'd helped me establish my office hours among the local spirit population. Oh, and Hayward has a major crush on her. I'm talking smitten kitten in a top hat. So for that alone, she gets a bit more leniency. Hayward deserves someone like Gwen. She's funny, bright, and despite her occasional ditzy moments, is quickly becoming one of my favorite people, dead or otherwise. As usual, I ate a microwave meal out of a plastic container down in my design studio, aka back room, taking bites in between other tasks. Lily Pond Floral Design was closed for business on Sundays and Mondays so that I could have some time off, as I was currently operating as a one-woman show. Even still, I tended to clock in a few hours, refreshing the window displays and taking inventory to get ready for the next week. It worked as a perfect guise for the ghost support group. The attendees all floated in, and I could continue to work while they chatted and presented occasional requests. If anyone walked past the front windows, they would likely assume I was singing along with the radio or talking to myself as I worked. Gwen rambled on about the local gossip of the week as I finished my broccoli and fish dinner and began working on an arrangement. Most of her revelations surrounded the arrival of a reality TV crew who spent the last week remodeling one of the town's older homes. Mince on the Pillows was a home improvement show that followed a husband and wife team who traveled the country renovating old, sometimes historic, properties into cozy bed and breakfasts. When the town gossip mill learned that our small town was about to be splashed across millions of television sets across the country, a small, outspoken group of people started raising hell and threatening to shut down production with protests and petitions.
"All I'm saying is that people are angry," Gwen concluded. "I heard the ladies in the salon saying a petition is going around as we speak to put a stop to the whole thing."
"Haven't they already started filming?" I asked, pausing to glance at her over the top of the bouquet I was arranging. Hayward didn't add much to the conversation. It seemed he was more interested in silently adoring our guest from his place at the front counter. I smiled at the dreamy look on his face, and then continued tweaking the hyacinth stalks I'd nestled amongst the greenery in the vase before me.
"They started filming Wednesday,"
Gwen replied without pause, as though she'd been taking minutes on every move the crew made, which in all likelihood she had. I offered a half shrug as I continued working. "I imagine the whole thing will blow over pretty quickly. I mean, how long are they supposed to be in town? A few weeks?"
"I haven't nailed that down yet."
Gwen shook her head, sending her feather earrings swinging. Gwen was an eternally preserved flower child, having died in the 70s following a tragic stage diving incident. Her delicate face didn't show the signs of the damage that it must have sustained, but I imagined the aftermath of the fall hadn't been pretty. "And people are just now signing petitions?" I asked, one eyebrow quirked. "Seems a little late."
"I'm not quite sure I understand the problem,"
Hayward interjected.
"Why are people so upset? A bed and breakfast sounds like just the thing this town needs."
"I think so, too. The Lilac House was made to be a B&B," Gwen agreed with an enthusiastic nod. "I saw the plans. It's going to be beautiful. Then again, anything would be better than the eyesore it's been for the last 2 decades. I mean, honestly, it looks like a giant house-sized Easter egg. According to my research..." I stifled a laugh. That's what Gwen called her gossip hunting. Research. Gwen shot me a withering glance and then continued. "According to my research, people in town think the house is haunted. That's why no one has lived there for so long. All the previous tenants have run screaming for the hills, and no one has dared move in since." I perked up at this. "Haunted?"
"Is it?"
Hayward asked. Gwen shrugged. "I've never met a ghost who lives there, but then again, I don't tend to go poking around uninvited." I snorted into the flowers and hurried to take them to the walk-in cooler. I set down the vase on one of the metal shelves built into the far back wall and then started gathering handfuls of fresh flowers from buckets scattered on the floor. By the time I exited, hands full of blooms and greenery, my teeth were chattering. Voices floated to me, and a quick sidelong glance showed that the first ghosts had arrived a few minutes ahead of the hour. Gwen was entertaining them for the time being, so I moved to my work table to deposit the flowers from the cooler. Hayward drifted closer.
"Before the meeting gets started, I wanted to apologize for this morning's antics, Lady Scarlet."
"Don't worry about it." I stifled a smile and flapped a hand at him. "Believe me, I'm sure it was mostly Flapjack's doing in the first place."
"Thanks for the vote of confidence, Scarlet,"
a cool tone interjected from behind me. I cringed and then pivoted on the toes of my ballet flats to see Flapjack, tail twitching, sitting on the floor beside the display case.
"Oh, come now, Flapjack," Hayward said. "You have to admit she has a valid point."
Flapjack scowled at Hayward, who quickly turned his attention to Gwen, clearly not wanting to tangle with the pint-sized walking attitude problem. "What are you even doing down here?" I asked Flapjack, stubbornly refusing to apologize, mostly because what I said was true.
You hate support group nights.
Flapjack cast a disdainful look toward the front of the shop where the ghosts were gathered, speaking in excited tones.
Oh, believe me, I'm not staying here for the freak parade.
He trotted away and leapt over the counter as though he were a thoroughbred show horse instead of a fluffy 11-pound cat. At least in life he'd been around that mark. Ghosts don't exactly have weight in the same way living beings do. With a heavy sigh after him, I fussed with the flowers on the work table before starting work on a new creation. The rest of the ghosts filtered in over the next 10 minutes, and by the top of the hour, we had a full house. Gwen spearheaded the meetings and was responsible for ferrying in new ghosts who might be aimlessly wandering through town. In some ways, I was just a body. If a ghost needed something specific done, something that required hands or an audible voice, they'd loop me into the conversation and make their request. Otherwise, I was pretty much free to halfway listen in as I worked. I quickly lost myself in a new design, and the ghost's chattering became white noise in the background. Gwen directed a question my way, and I glanced up, smiling, ready to answer her, when a wave of dizziness nearly drove me to my knees. The smile slid from my lips as my hands wavered. The handful of roses slipped from my fingers and fell to the floor. Scarlet? Gwen called out, swooping closer. I splayed my hands on the cool surface of the counter to keep them from shaking. Something was way wrong. A rush, almost like the sound of the ocean, roared in my ears and made me lightheaded and unbalanced. My squared-off nails raked across the counter as I struggled to stay upright. Bam! The front door burst open and slammed into the wall, the metal stopper snapping like it was a toothpick, and the glass panels shattered. I ducked behind the counter as glittering shards exploded inward from the impact. When I dared peek over the edge, a striking ghost hovered midair, her long raven hair flying out behind her like a superhero cape. The air around her crackled and popped as her fierce eyes flashed with sheer rage. They locked on mine, and the hair on my arms and the back of my neck stood up.
You!
She bellowed, one finger raised, pointing imperiously at me.
Are you the Ghost Whisperer?
I'm pretty sure the question wasn't rhetorical, and if her grand entrance was any indication, things were about to get ugly.
Chapter 2.
Answer me,
the ghost hissed. Yes, I managed, my legs trembling. The ghost surged forward with a rush, blowing papers off my counter. The other spirits in the room, being the wise souls that they are, backed away to give her room. With her face so near to mine that I would have been able to smell her breath if she had any, she narrowed her eyes and commanded,
"You're going to help me."
"Excuse me, young lady."
Hayward appeared at my side, his lined face tight.
"Just who do you think you are?"
The ghost didn't acknowledge Hayward or his questions for a few moments, then turned and rushed toward them as she had me.
"Get out!"
she bellowed, loud enough that the entire neighborhood would have heard her if she weren't a ghost. Not that it would have made much of a difference, because everyone within a 3-block radius was likely already on alert thanks to the explosion of my front door. The impact had sounded like a nasty car crash. I was half expecting police sirens to begin wailing through the night. My crew shrank back a bit, but stood firm. I had to hand it to them. They were loyal. Okay. She turned back toward me, and I held my hands out in surrender. But the anger on her face didn't diminish. Let's take one step back here. I'm Scarlet Sanderson, I told her, hating that I couldn't keep my voice from trembling. Who are you? The other ghosts in the shop were all fixated on the newcomer, awaiting her answer, and none of them exhibited even a flicker of recognition. Was she new in town? There was no way she was new to being a ghost. Going full poltergeist like that was a rare thing. It took most ghosts years to harness their emotions into physical reactions, and clearly she had it mastered.
"Those monsters are destroying my home," she howled,
ignoring my question.
They've taken a sledgehammer to everything. The walls? The kitchen?
A strange, strangled sound bubbled from her lips, and they started to tremble. She grasped at her hair.
Oh, the kitchen?
You used to live at Lilac House? Gwen asked, swooping forward to flank my other side. The angry expression surged back onto the woman's shimmering face. Her eyes narrowed to thin slits as she shifted them toward Gwen.
I still live there,
she hissed. Comprehension dawned on the faces around me. Okay. I lowered my hands slowly back down to the counter. Listen, I'm sure this whole thing is upsetting. I know that a lot of people around town are upset about the project. I glanced over at my destroyed front door and cringed. What else was this ghost capable of? I wasn't sure I wanted to find out, so I kept my voice soothing and tried to avoid any quick movements.
I've gotten rid of everyone else who has dared to move into my house.
The woman crossed her arms. She stared down her nose at me as though daring me to contradict her. I cocked a brow. I guess that explained the haunted house rumors. They're not trying to tear the house down. They're turning the house into a bed and breakfast, I explained, bracing myself for another wave of angry energy. The woman shook her head, sending a ripple through the ghostly waves of her hair.
Oh, no, they're not. Not as long as I'm there.
I looked to Gwen, silently calling out for help. She either missed the cue or was playing dumb. The other ghosts in the room had gone eerily silent, all of them backed away, clinging to the walls of the shop. Tell you what, there's a petition being passed around.
Yes, there's a committee trying to get the house turned into a historical landmark,
Gwen interrupted, a hopeful lilt to her voice. I nodded.
Right. I'll sign my name to one and try to get some other folks to do the same.
It was a weak attempt at placating her, but it was the best offer I could come up with on the fly. She snorted.
I'm afraid that's not good enough. I want them gone. Now!
I frowned, irritation breaking through the initial fear. Listen, I don't know who you are, but you can't just expect me to walk onto a construction site, snap my fingers, and send them all packing.
Fine.
The ghost shrugged, unconcerned, then rushed back into my face, practically nose to nose. The cool rush of air as she did so gave me goosebumps.
You have a week to get them out. Otherwise, people will start getting hurt.
Icy fingers raked down my back. She meant it. I took a deep breath, knowing that I needed to keep her calm.
That won't solve anything, I shook my head. No one needs to get hurt. We can figure something.
A week,
she repeated, cutting me off with another frosty stare.
Now see here,
Hayward said, charging forward. It was too late. With a loud crack, the ghost vanished. A chill swept through the room, as though she'd somehow sucked all the heat from the space as she left. Everyone stared at the spot she'd vacated, then turned back to the pile of shattered glass scattered over the floral welcome mat. Gwen broke the silence with a scoff.
Well, that was dramatic, she said, tossing her sheet of permanently sun-bleached blonde hair behind her shoulders.
Stars above. I've never seen anything like it,
Hayward said, still agog. Whispers spread through the room, and then all at once everyone mumbled excuses and vanished, leaving me alone with Gwen and Hayward. I stayed frozen in place, my eyes fixed on the jagged lines of glass that remained along the edges of the door's metal panels.
What are we going to do?
Gwen shook her head.
Honey, I'd start by getting a broom.
The police did a drive-by to make sure everything was all right a little while after the incident. One of the younger officers on the force, Jason Keith, put his squad car in park and marched up to the front door where I was stooped over, sweeping up the shards of glass. We'd met at the coffee shop a few days after I'd arrived in town, and he'd stopped in not too long after my grand opening to order a bouquet for his mother. At least,
That's who he'd said they were for. Hello, Officer Keith. Gwen purred, twirling one of her feather earrings as he...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?